Hello friends, we begin with chapter 5, which is on international marketing entry strategies. In other words, how an Indian businessman can enter into any other international market. So various strategies and options available to him will be discussed today. So before we get into that, one has to understand that the key differentiator which is within the business in the same country versus going international is like selection of the market, first of all. Then how will you enter the market? Of course, those market will have its own challenges in terms of legal issues, regulatory frameworks, political stability, instability or dynamism to grow the country, economic affairs and cultural barriers. So what it is trying to understand is selection of the international market is very critical, and therefore you have two approaches that one can look at. First is identification of the market. So how can you determine which market is very viable for me? And second, any barriers or challenges exist based on the information available today. So post determination of potential about the market, and then how do you tap the potential remains a challenging aspects. So challenges in tapping the potential, as we discussed, it could be legal, regulatory issues, political environment, and success is therefore not guaranteed. So what are the key points one should look at when you want to identify international market for venturing? So evaluate whether do you have the need in the first place? Do you really think that the business growth not likely more out here in the domestic market and you have a more opportunity in the international market and various such factors, whether tapping the international market is worthy of it. So kind of investment it may require, the risk it will have vis-a-vis how much will you earn. Doing complete evaluation is very critical. So you apply geographic filters, demographic aspects you study, political scenario, socio-economic and cultural factors you study. So there are, in fact, frameworks which we are not, of course, discussing. So CAGE framework and Hofstede model are generally applied to understand this. Choosing the right market for entry. So you, when you evaluate multiple market, maybe more than one market are showing a potential, but then how do you determine the right market? The investment it is required, the time, that the gestation period, that your investment may start from day one, but by when you can actually enter the market and you will start be able to earn out of it, the kind of effort it may require. Do you have the required resources? So resources is not all about money, but material, manpower, access to network, many aspects, and capability to withstand the shock. International market remains a kind of uncertain market, and do you have that ability to withstand if there is sudden change in some taxation or some barriers are imposed? Can you withhold that? So the process and the factor in market selection is first determine what is your objective to enter the market. Is it a business growth? Is it the compulsion that is forcing you? Or is it that your products are very viable and most likely to be acceptable? Or you have a large Indian population. So for example, India Gate Basmati rice or Kohinoor Basmati rice have large Indian population available. So access that you want to give it to them, there may be such objectives that you may have. Evaluate the market, market in terms of the potential and what is the ease of doing business out there. Then comes the demographic and physical environment. So you will study those aspects as such. Then, of course, are there any restrictions in terms of tariff, non-tariff or customs and various regulatory compliances that you have to undergo? How stable and unstable the political environment is, and what is the social and cultural compatibility? Is the thread between various culture, religion out there is peaceful, or they are at a kind of loggerheads and that may be creating unwarranted tension? So all aspects needs to be evaluated. So we will actually get into process and the factor that is involved in the selection of the market. So we will get into that, we'll do it one by one. So first thing, as I mentioned, defining the objective to enter any international market. Unique reason for entering the international market range from saturation in the home market. Your home market is not growing and therefore you need to explore other growing market, or as we say, emerging market. the sole objective overall remains, of course, is to increase your revenue and thereby the profit. So that being the case, but there may be other compelling reasons. Also, you need to understand how revenue and profit will come to you. So whether products are very well required, are they satisfying specific need of the customer, will you be able to differentiate? So like Walmart not only looks at comprehensive, like India is a large market, still Walmart is not full-fledged out here in India. They look at market, retail market, but many other aspects. So in terms of infrastructure, in terms of other compliances and all, we are falling short of their requirement and therefore they are not directly entering. This decision decides, understanding of all those things will decide whether you should enter or you should not enter. The second step or the second process step is evaluating the market itself. So how do you evaluate the market? Justification is first of all needed for entering into identified market. So once you have, say, probably potential identified, you have to create a justification why this specific market over the other market. You may require certain due diligences of compliances, regulations, barriers, etc. Various products and market parameters. What is well accepted out here, your product may not find that kind of an acceptance. So have you done any dipstick, etc.? Explore depth of opportunity, whether it is a shallow, deep, whether it is sustainable by you, so that you can look at long term. So that's the evaluation part. Look at distribution and supply chain. Is the network available for you to reach out to the potential target customers? Kind of a competition. Are you in a very monopolistic, duopolistic, or severely competitive market? What is the nature of competition? Whether it is fair, unfair, price war, what is happening in that market? Other aspects like proximity to the home country. So closer you are able to have many advantages which you can even transfer to the international market. Your attention could be better. Your ability to understand the cultural aspects of that country, etc. All those will add value. So proximity vis-a-vis the home market is also very critical. And certain macro and micro level perspective, certain bird's eye view aspects and certain very finer industry related aspects. So that is what one has to look at. The third point is the evaluating the demographic and geographic factors. Demographic, as you know, does with the population, so to say. So you will understand the size of the population, relevance of that population to your product. So 100 million may be the size, but your product being a luxury product, it may be just appealing to 5 million. So like you have to know the relevance, that is, how is the growth going to happen in that country, urban, rural divide, etc. Your proximity to home market, we often discuss. So like the example of Starbucks is given. A company like Starbucks has even made itself successful in China, which is predominantly a tea consuming company. But they have understood this, but they saw that millennials of China are looking at breaking traditional aspects, you know, and they are looking at adopting to newer varieties. And therefore, no doubt Starbucks also entered with green tea and some of the very unique tea taste also, but they simultaneously started serving coffee. And then that's how the growth has happened. So the fourth point is understanding the tariff, customs and other regulatory aspects. These are those barrier or facilitating aspects. So you must know whether tariff is on a higher side, a lower side. So for example, when I'm shooting this, the India and UK has entered into a free trade agreement. So you see various tariffs have gone down or literally vanished. Is there any regulation compliances that one has to go? Custom, how difficult the custom processes are. So this is a non-tariff. They are indirect way to like, you know, create a hurdle for more import into the country, etc. How are the Foreign Exchange Regulations Act? How is our rupee vis-a-vis the other country? So lower the value, higher the value, accordingly your billing and amount required to purchase one unit of foreign, product will go up or down, you know. Technical barrier, are there any technical barriers to trade in terms of you require? Nowadays, there are many companies of abroad are requesting government of India to introduce 6G, 7G because the kind of direct interaction they want with the consumer needs very rapid data transfer. So that also is one aspect. So hidden trade barrier, if there is any, which is in form of indirect regulations, inspection of goods, and many such ways we have studied earlier, any standards and practices which you are expected to comply with. So with that, then comes the political and economic stability. We have studied this earlier, so not getting too much into it. PESTEL analysis, the framework that we have understood earlier, it's your way to determine how stable enterprising political setup is and how dynamic the economy is. Economic stability you can determine through the growth, the gross domestic product growth. We are above 6.5% or 6%, which is highest so far. Trade balance, whether it is deficit trade balance, means we are importing more than the exporting, or it is a surplus trade balance, means we are exporting more than importing. So debt, whether country is debt ridden. So many voices are now coming that, you know, India is also becoming debt ridden. Okay, so one need to really look at in a way that do we have a repayment capability, or we are going to get burdened under that. So that aspect. So we have understood overall the various processes. Now that is, we need to understand is the segmentation in the international market. It is one of the very important aspect of marketing management. We know that STP, segmentation, targeting and positioning, is a critical aspects. So now, you know, the segmentation is all about identifying the harmonious group of people with demonstrating the similar characteristics. Now the segmentation that probably you've done it in India or in the home country may not be the right segmentation abroad. So you may have to determine your segmentation approach. If you do not do that, you may try and appeal to the wrong segment or a target. You may probably disproportionately allocate fund to the segment which do not really require that kind of a funding. You may not be able to study the cultural nuances that may impact the selection of your goods, etc. So what will happen, you will fail to understand the expectation of your target group of customers. So segmentation being very critical. There are various ways in which it has been done. We have studied here earlier also, but we will study it from the international marketing point of view. Geographic segmentation, when it comes to the international marketing, it is all about the kind of cities that you are venturing, the states, the region, the topography, etc., of that country vis-a-vis the home country, etc. So those are the aspects that you try to study. It can be also cultural aspects. So European countries versus African countries, so much of a different culture. One is very westernized, very open-minded, very liberal. The other one is, there is a dearth of even education. So their mindset is not so open. So, you know, there are differences out there. Understanding common characteristics across global region also is very critical. So McDonald's has understood that initially they were not very clear, but soon they enter, they realize the importance of serving veg across McDonald's outlets. So they have turned themselves into, you know, veg outlets, etc. So you see that these are the requirements. Overall, when you are into the segmentation, assumption that you make is that geographical dimension do offer certain similarity. Buyer living in certain geographic condition have similar characteristics, traits that they show, and therefore the selection also are more or less meeting those aspects. So that one aspect is very critical. The challenge of geographic segmentation is, like, you know, require that different market, you may have to apply different approach to segmentation. So European market, South African market, you may have to have a different segmentation approach altogether. So like here, the example is given. So like in a hot and humid country like India and Brazil, Coca-Cola promote beverages as a refreshing and hydrating drinks. Means you satisfy your hydration need as well as you get refreshed. But not in other country. There it may be promoted differently. Demographic segmentation is all about the population composition, so to say. So like male, female, total population, the age-wise, there are age bracket-wise, you will know the number, the income, per capita income, overall occupation, self-employed, employed, service, government service, many aspects, okay? So for many products, say like for example, the age of the population is very critical. Baby diaper, India's population growth has reduced, but because number overall being very large, it still offers a very good market for baby products, so to say. So, however, many scenario users and you know influencers could also play a different role, vital role. So, many countries the advancement has happened where influencers play a role. Mother and you know the earlier generation, the connect has kind of broken, and today's mother more rely on social media to get various motherhood related tips. So that also one aspect of a demography that you need to understand. So demographic way of segmentation, for example, like an age, it helps marketer to tap this very important subject matter, customer life cycle. If you capture somebody young, okay, you have overall a long life that you connect or remain connected with that customer and extract more from his wallet. So, for example, Nike's Air Jordan line especially targets young basketball enthusiasts, whereas running shoes of Nike is for marathon runners and very fitness conscious individuals. So you see that once you understand demography aspects, you can tweak your product and product offering, etc. Socioeconomic segmentation, here it's to do with the society and the economic conditions, so to say. Economic developments we have discussed earlier. Good economic development offers opportunity for manufacturing as well as consumption, and overall economies of scale will be achieved. So that's a positive side of having a good economic condition. Social distinct indications are like lifestyle indications, are the social indications. India was once upon a time a joint family concept. Then comes the family concept, nuclear family concept. Now it's a neo-nuclear where husband is in one city, wife is another city, and kids are in boarding school in some third city. So that's what also we have very well accepted. Okay, so you see that things are gradually shifting. So this understanding is required because this creates a kind of a different nature of demand for different nature of product and services. So now once you understand the lifestyle, you will understand overall the changing personality of the people. And once personality aspect is also you are able to connect, okay, then there are products for grooming, style, you know, showcasing your persona, etc., status, and all those things will come into picture. So, for example, Apple employs socioeconomic segmentation by positioning its product as premium and for affluent class, okay. It introduced more affordable models, however, like iPhone SE to capture very price-sensitive market in Southeast Asia and Latin America. So that also being a very large market, however, they were able to put both the market, keep both the market mutually exclusive, serve the specific needs of Southeast and Latin American market. Cultural segmentation. So, culture is the thread which binds various people across a country. Now, how do you look at that? So, it explores, there is a Hofstede dimension. It explores disparity or parity between when, okay, impact of culture on any buying behavior, okay, opportunities due to shift in cultural value. For example, today's youth prefer more of style products, grooming products. They are more keen on showcasing their different social persona than what they are actually. So that's why the product which will help him to demonstrate, showcase, attracts more attention. So that's the change that is happening. And many things are me too types, you know, for me kind of. Earlier it was for house, for family. So that shift has happened. So India, which is also witnessing a shift towards women's equality, as you can see that many genre which earlier was male only has been now broken by women coming into it. They are like the driver of the metro train. They've climbed Everest. They are in army also, combat role also. So you see that this shift which is happening doesn't leave marketeers with any, you know, it offers rather an opportunity to marketers to clearly and separately serve this emerging genre. So in China, KFC, which is a brand, offers congri, a traditional rice podigi, as a breakfast option, whereas in Indonesia and Malaysia, KFC ensures it's offering the halal certified meal, mutton or chicken, etc. So this is what the cultural aspect that one has to weave in, like no beef in country like India. So that aspect also one need to. Political segmentation, very, very critical. It's not like a segmentation criteria, but markets can be divided also, because we are talking about international. So stability is one aspect, instable, you know, so that way India is now emerged as a very stable market, but many South African countries are still jostling with the stability, they are intra-fighting, etc. So these are the things which also can enable you to kind of divide countries on a political segmentation basis. Stable, unstable, disturbing environment, or a, you know, friendly environment, or a growth-oriented environment, etc., are the ways the political segmentation can be considered. It enables organizations to decide the nature of presence, okay, whether you have few buyers or agents to take care of that region, or government is encouraging manufacturing, so then can you go and manufacture out there. So for example, in China, Tesla set up a gigafactory in Shanghai to bypass high import tariff, which otherwise they would have to face due to local government's tariff structure. Meanwhile, in India, Tesla has delayed its market entry. Now they've just entered, you know, when I'm today in front of you, they've entered in Mumbai, okay. So it's because of high import duty, uncertainty, subsidies, issues, etc. So these are the reason why the political aspect matter. That is what I'm trying to help you understand. So now we understand market entry strategies one by one, starting with exporting. So as I said, we will study each entry level strategy one by one to start with exporting. But before we get into them, let's understand that every strategy has certain risks and certain reward. Here you have a graphical representation which shows different strategies and how it is linked with the risk and reward. To just start and explain you, exporting, simple exporting to third party agent or third person, you shoulder very limited risk, okay, but your income is also, reward is also limited, because he may be buying from you in 100 rupees, but he is able to sell it in 200 rupees. So you see, the reward that you get is limited. Going thereby, if you enter into, say, joint venture, wherein you give your product technology and manufacturing art, etc., and the other side invests in terms of giving you the manufacturing and access to the network, you are able to play with the market. You understand market, demand supply gap, and accordingly you can probably charge pricing. So you may earn a better reward, but because the direct investment is involved, you shoulder higher risk. And the last is, like, you set up your own company in that other country. It means investment is your own completely. So high risk, but you are able to probably get a better of the market by playing all the strategy and tactics to attract customer, grow market, market penetration, market expansion. So you may be able to earn a better reward. So that is the significance of this graphical point. Now coming to exporting, essentially manufactured in one country, sold in other country through a party who is buying your product in the other country. So okay, here the two parties are involved. Therefore, the exporter who resides in the host country and the importer resides in the foreign market. Okay, now you can have a direct export or an indirect export. There are two types of export that one can do. Direct export, here both party knows each other, okay, and exactly knows what is he requiring it for and what is he going to do with it. So direct export, exporter should be well versed with the foreign country, the condition out there. They even exchange these views, you know, so vis-a-vis the importing party, their financial parity, stability, credit system in that country, etc. So that you are able to directly deal with the other party in the foreign market. In terms of indirect export, the exporter doesn't know who the importer is. Someone domestically procures the goods and exports it to the another country. So here within your own country, somebody obtains goods from you. You know that he is not going to sell it within the country, but because your goods are getting sold, you are giving it to him. But you do not know where is he sending, whom is he sending. So you are ignorant about the opportunity that he is taking, you know, tapping. So government of every country encourages exports because that brings the foreign exchange inward to the country. So your balance of trade becomes favorable. So now exporting wise, you see this one tool is also nowadays coming up is an e-commerce is an exporting tool. So there are platforms which offer you direct access with the party on the other side of the country. And then when they raise an inquiry, you interact, you complete your export transaction. So that's on e-commerce today. So Chinese brand Xiaomi entered European market. Okay, initially they used Amazon as a platform. Later they ventured with their own setup, etc. So core advantage of exporting is very bare minimum investment. It's just hardly you can say your only product is your investment. Scalability is there. You can increase gradually your access to more market. Diversification of revenue stream is also possible. Okay, you can one country you have already introduced and you know made yourself successful. You can enter other products out there. Leverage home country strength. You are able to leverage the strength that you have within the home country. Maybe the better production utilization. So economies of scale, etc. R&D also that can be an advantage. The core disadvantage is logistical challenges that you may face because many times the foreign country guy expects you to lend goods at your risk on his shore. So there are those foreign terms you will study at the end. Tariff and trade barriers, open and hidden barriers. So that may hamper your business. Limited market control. You have absolutely no control. You probably do not know who's end consuming your product, etc. So you are not in a position to really expand. You are dependent on that exporting or importing party. Currency and political risk, currency fluctuations may make your proposition viable, unviable, etc. Some other country's product may become then viable. So those are the things. Then political risk. If there is a sudden political turmoil, the business gets threatened. We have noticed recently, say, Bangladesh and you know other part of the world, where sudden political this rift and the business is adversely impacted. Licensing is a second entry-level strategy. Here, one country grants the right to use its intellectual property to a firm in the another country for a specific sum known as royalty payment. I will allow you to manufacture goods in my name, okay, use my trademark, use my logo, etc. But I need a royalty upfront payment. Under this license, the firm can produce and market product, okay, using the company's brand and also the technology many times, because how to do it also has been transferred as a technology transfer. So that's the licensing. Disney, for example, uses this very well, where various characters and all the licenses are given. So the producer in other country can make caps, mugs, etc. using Disney characters. So, but Disney has already collected something called royalty payment from that party. You can enter foreign market without commitment, okay, to substantial resources from your side. In fact, you just earn royalty. You have to just take the trouble of transferring the technology, okay, and the right and the material, etc. One of the most well-known example, Disney, that is what I was trying to tell you. They license the characters, you know, to the party worldwide, gift item maker and t-shirt makers and likewise. So that's what licensing is all about. Involves no transportation costs, no tariff and other barriers, okay. It encourages local production there so that you are not like hampering the economy of that country any which ways, okay. Local resources are going to utilize, okay. So it's again not your botheration. Overall cost can be contained and the investment can be minimized, okay. You have to only ensure that the misuse of your license is not taking place. The risk is definitely minimized due to sharing, okay. Licensee is more responsible, okay. He can be held responsible if there are certain breaches are noticed. Licensee can prove to be future competitor. However, that's one risk that in future he may become your competitor. For some of the businesses, it is happening like that. So, core advantage of licensing is low financial risk. Rather, you may not have any risk. Faster entry, you have to just give the artwork, you have to just give the technology transfer, etc. You have an access to the local market, local expertise. Revenue generation is possible through royalties you are earning, and you are avoiding the trade barrier. The core disadvantage is limited control over the use of the branded material. Quality issue, you do not know how good or bad they are going to make your product, which may hamper or impact your brand. Low profit margin, okay, then the direct operation, I have shown you that framework. Risk of creating future competitors, as we have discussed already, and difficulty in maintaining the brand consistency. So that's a big disadvantage against licensing. The third one is a franchising, which is very popular nowadays. It's a method of expanding a business and distributing goods and services through a licensing relationship. But you know, licensing was possible for some of the categories of goods, but how this Domino's and how this Pizza Hut and all have expanded, they've expanded through what you call franchisee. Today you see even gymnasiums are franchised. So it's like, you know, not only the mere brand or the brand asset passing on, it's like entire business framework, which is more conscious about quality and brand consistency, while brand ownership is with the main person, and even marketing and certain core processes are controlled by them. So it's a relationship between two parties, the one who owns the brand and the other who's an investor, okay, which is so that's what franchisor and franchisee. Franchisor is the one who's giving a brand, Domino's. Franchisee is the one, say Mr. Hathi is investing into putting up a Domino's outlet in Chembur. So I am a franchisee. Franchisee is one who gives the license, that I have already told you, and franchisee we discussed. Agreement covers whether all products, specific category, what is passed on, what is not passed on. Many times all these Pizza Huts and all have a license or say agreement in which even the bases and donuts and dows and etc. all have to be purchased from the franchisor. So these are the kind of an arrangement you can get into. So McDonald's has over 40,000 outlets across 100 plus countries. Most are franchised operation. Post agreement being signed, there is a give and take. Okay. So here, not only certain royalties been collected, there may be certain kind of a fees or certain earning linked to the business volume that you do can also be fixed up, etc. However, entire know-how, IT support, various business development support are all the responsibility of franchisor. So what you see that Domino's, that you know, missed call and online ordering, all this thing is their centralized marketing, this thing where Mr. Hathi puts in an order, looking at my PIN code, then they will pass it on to the nearest, nearest Domino's outlet, and then they will supply. So this person also got a business, but developing business is franchisor's responsibility for the franchisee. So that's how the franchising operation works. Here there are two types of payment approach. One time initial fee, okay, which is known as a franchising fee or franchising fees, etc., so to say, and continuing fee, which is royalty fee, which is either on the volume or on certain one particular aspect on which you decide. Okay, franchisee have complete freedom to operate his business. So here the investor has a complete freedom to operate the business within the realms of certain brand guidelines, certain process guideline. Okay, so that is when the quality control, etc., that has to be ensured. So that's how the franchisee operation work. As we said, rapid marketing expansion is possible. 40,000 outlets, McDonald's on its own probably may not have achieved, but it's because they have encouraged entrepreneurship. They've asked entrepreneurs to come forward and use the advantage of the brand that they have created. Low financial risk because you are not really investing, okay? You are leveraging the local expertise. That person in that market knows various local nuances very well. You create high brand visibility, that will create a positive rub-off. Scalability is there. Wherever you want to expand, you have to just indicate to the market that you are available for this franchisee agreement. Okay, reduce management burden on the franchisor. So he has to then focus on certain core thing which makes his spine of the business, and that he is to focus there. He doesn't have to spread too thin. And the disadvantage is, of course, no direct control on the operation, brand dilution based on the quality, control not being effectively done, dependence on the franchisee performance. So you depend on how that franchisee operation is being performed. Okay. Challenges in enforcing uniform norms or the standards. Okay. And then, so like you expect them to have certain standardization. They may contest saying that it is creating costly material. So like then they may try to argue with you, they may try to shortchange you, etc. So legal and other complex obligations. So if law of the land generally applies, so you may try to bind the franchisor in many ways, but sometimes certain law prevail over your, given terms and condition. Difficulty in terminating the underperforming franchisee, because then he can counter and say that you did not give me enough material or market and, orders, etc. So there are those complexities. So this is about franchising.